Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
John, how are you getting on?
I'm very well, thanks. Good morning.
So, big weekend this weekend. We'll get into the Scottish Premiership in just a moment, which is back. The FA Cup final, though, it's your former club going against your former teammate in Frank Lampard. I don't know where to start here. Will we start with Lampard? I mean, it's been a season where you have to say he's done incredibly well with the situation that he's been in, with no transfer window coming into this season. At the same time, it almost seems like the tables have turned immediately at the end of the year, given all the wealth that Chelsea have now splashed and the added pressure that potentially comes with that.
Well, yes, of course, you know, expectation levels all of a sudden rise tenfold, don't they, when you start spending money. That's when the pressure comes on the manager, because you've got to prove that, you know, you've done good business in the market if you're going and spending 60, 70 million pounds on a player, a forward, and he flops, as we've seen many a times with loads of players in the past. Then the buck stops with the manager, although the recruitment team as well would be part of that. But no, Chelsea, you know, Chelsea are all red. I think Frank Lampard's actually overachieved. I think to get into fourth position in the Premier League, they've already secured Champions League football for next season. And as far as Arsenal are concerned, they've had another poor season, finishing eighth in the Premier League. Of course, if they win the FA Cup, they will have a chance to go into the Europa League. But no, you know, it'll be an interesting game because Chelsea can almost relax, if you like, although Frank won't be treating the game very relaxed because he'll want to win his first trophy as a Chelsea manager. But as I said, Chelsea have already done exceptionally well by securing Champions League football for next season. That could entice one or two players to come and play for Chelsea because all the top players now want to play in the Champions League. And, of course, you've got the talking point over Aubameyang at Arsenal. I'm not too sure whether, you know, people are saying, well, Arsenal have to win this because it's Europa League. You know, listen, Leicester and Spurs are playing in the Europa League next season as well. So, as I said, we'll see what happens.
On this Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang situation, it's an unbelievably important case here for Arsenal to keep him. It's as important as anything that they will do in the transfer market this summer in terms of bringing people in. The season that he's had, John, has been remarkable. Where Arsenal lie in chances created is way down the table in the Premier League, but he still went into the final day with a great opportunity of winning the Golden Boot. He is outperforming the chances that have been created for him. He is outscoring when it comes to the opportunities that have been put on his plate. This guy, perhaps we actually don't appreciate just how vital he is, even in the context of other Premier League strikers, in terms of what we've seen over the last few months.
No, he's an outstanding player. He's a goal scorer. He works his socks off. And even though, you know, Arsenal were sort of languishing in 7th or 8th position, his attitude was spot on. You know, he was running his socks off, he was working back, he was scoring goals, he was creating chances. He is an outstanding player and he won't be cheap for Arsenal to keep him. It's just whether or not Aubameyang, you know, wants to go and play for a Champions League team or what other offers are on the table for him. But I'm not too sure whether winning the FA Cup final will make a huge difference. I think possibly he may well have, you know, made his mind up to stay. I think Mikel Arteta might have made a big difference in terms of his decision. He seems to be enjoying his football, playing alongside Lacazette and Saka and Pepe and these guys. So, you know, that's an intriguing one to see, you know, with another 11 months or so on left on his contract, what Aubameyang actually does. Will he sign on for another couple of years? Will he play the FA Cup? Will it be his last game? Because Arsenal, I would imagine, may have to try and cash in if he tells them that he wants to leave, because he's only got a year left in his contract, and there will be clubs out there that will want to pay some money for him. It's just a case of Arsenal might just try and cash in if he tells them that he wants to leave. So, you know, it's important in terms of what decision he makes in terms of Arsenal going forward, because you can build a team around Aubameyang. He's that good.
For sure. How impressed or otherwise have you been with that cohesion that has developed under Mikel Arteta then? Like, you've obviously played in strike partnerships. What it is nowadays, obviously, is trio up front, it tends to be at the moment. And it has seemed that himself and Lacazette have a bit of a telepathic understanding, but perhaps that's not enough. Perhaps you need Pepe to come in, and it needs to be a trio up front who can almost work in tandem with one another.
Well, I'm not so sure whether the front players is a problem. I think they'll score goals. I think Lacazette will score. I think Pepe, I think there's a player in there. I think he will become good. I see some really good stuff that he does. And other times, he flatters to deceive a little bit. I think Saka is a really good player. And Nketiah, youngsters coming through. Obviously, Tini, you know, just finding his form, if you like, finished the season very, very well. I think it's defensively Arsenal need to have a big shake-up, because I'm not too sure whether Mustafi, Luiz and Kolasinac are the answer centrally, you know, defensively for Arsenal. You know, they will give the opposition chances, and you can't go into a game thinking, well, we need to score three or four goals every time we play to win this game. Because you're all saying that, they were outstanding against Manchester City in the semi-final. You know, so but can they be consistent? I'm not too sure. So if I'm, you know, Arteta's done very well. I think he's settled things down at Arsenal without pulling up any trees. They've still finished eighth. So, you know, there's still a little bit of work to do there. But certainly for me, it's defensively is your major issue at Arsenal. I think going forward, yes, they could do with another midfield player. But going forward, I think they're reasonably strong. It's just defensively worry about them, you know?
Just one more on Arsenal, John, for me anyway. Like, you mentioned the defensive frailties that they have, and those frailties exist in areas of their midfield as well. Away from that then, how much of this is an attitude and a culture problem at Arsenal with the lapses that they show in defence and the weakness that they often show in midfield? Like, I think the Mesut Ozil situation has become almost the epitome of poisonous elements within the Arsenal dressing room. To a lesser extent, the Matteo Guendouzi situation speaks to the same. How important is it that whatever they do in the transfer market, they're signing the right characters as much as the right footballers?
Well, I think, you know, to question his character, you know, is quite strong to go in and question a character of a player. But I think there's been evidence of Ozil and Guendouzi, obviously, you know, showing that little bit of disrespect to the manager, the new manager. When somebody new comes in, you know, automatically, naturally, you want to impress the new manager. You don't go the other way, you know, like they've done. You want to go out there, you want to run around, you want to show the manager, look, I want to get in your team. You know, I didn't quite get on too well with Emery, this, that, or the other, the former manager. But, you know, and it's unbelievable to think that. But what I would say is, I don't think he deals with sort of slacking very well, Arteta. I think he's dealt with the situation. He's left Guendouzi out of the whole situation. Ozil hasn't featured at all. I think he has gone in there almost, Arteta, and said, look, it's my way or the highway. If you don't fit into the criteria that I want to play and the way I want to train and the way I want to set the team up, you won't be in my team. And I think he's been very strong already with some of the signs that he's shown since he's gone into Arsenal. You know, he's looked at the situation. He's gone, Guendouzi's not for me. Listen, he may well bring him back. I don't know, but he's already shown. He said he's not for me. He's left him out. Ozil hasn't featured hardly at all. So they're looking for a buyer for Ozil, but he's got 1 year left in his contract. So I think Arteta has sort of stamped his authority, and he has sort of made the players be known that he'll have no messing around. He wants to train like they play. He wants a professional attitude around the whole club. And I think he's done very well in that sense. But I think you're right. I think when you're signing a player, you're always looking for the right types with the right attitude and the players that can fit into your system. You know, that's imperative if you're going to move forward.
John, just looking at that Guendouzi situation, like in some ways it's maybe the easy thing to do, right? Like Arsenal, as Owen was kind of alluding to there, probably have a bit of a culture issue or have had for a number of years, and that needs weeding out. Like in some ways it's the easy thing to do to say this guy is going to be the figurehead of this and I'm going to send out a message to the rest of the squad by doing this. The more difficult thing and maybe the better thing for Arsenal to do over the longer term would have been to have, because I think his Guendouzi's quality is not really in question, that if it was a player that you could get his attitude correct, it's the harder thing to do to bring him back in. In terms of Arteta's approach on that, what's your take? Like, I mean, getting that guy focused on playing for Arsenal regularly would be a really big positive for them.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. I think you make a really good point. But what you've got to understand is not all managers are the same. Not all managers deal with players in the same way. And we don't know, you know, we are not party to what happens on the training ground and what Guendouzi is like around the place and how he deals with, you know, coming off or how he deals with being on the bench. Is he a bad influence around the dressing room? You know, and Arteta's decided to, you know, to take action and to drop him, basically leave him out in the cold. But as I said, he may well come back in. But no, I think it's an art if you can put your arm around a player. I had many problems with managers. And the one thing you don't try and make it is personal. You know, if you're not doing your job right, or, you know, you sometimes Arsene Wenger, you know, he had a reputation, Arsene Wenger, of being fairly soft with the players, didn't he? He would find a way to talk to them, put his arm around them, and then slowly bring them back to the fold. Whereas Arteta, maybe Arteta's gone in then and said, right, I need to make an immediate impression. If players are not working for me, you know, if they're not doing what I expect them to do, if they're being lazy in their whole demeanour, then, you know, this is the way I deal with it. This is the way Pep Guardiola dealt with it. Because you look at Sane. Sane was left out of a major tournament because he dropped out of the Man City team simply because he wouldn't track back. For all his talent, Sane at Man City, who just moved on, you know, Pep Guardiola left him on the bench. Because if he wouldn't work in tandem with the team, if he wasn't in sync with the other players in terms of tracking back and working forward and up and down that left-hand side, well, he's not in my team. And I think nowadays, the work rate and the work ethic of a team, everybody has to work. You know, you can't carry players nowadays, whereas years ago, you had a bit of a lazy centre-forward, or you might have a lazy right-winger who'd walk back and not sprint back, if you like, when your team was in trouble. Nowadays, you know, the way the game has gone, it's so fast now, and, you know, with the sports science, players are extremely fit. You can't carry people now. And maybe Arteta's gone in and it says, Ozil. Ozil's a waste of space anyway, in my opinion, because, you know, the contract that he's signed, you know, good luck to him with that contract. But the bottom line is for him to have shown the lack of respect towards his teammates. For me, you know, he doesn't deserve to put an Arsenal shirt on, however clever he is in possession, as people say. So Arteta's gone in and he said, right, from the very word go, this is how I'm going to do things. And that's the way he's dealt with things. But, you know, you do have a point. Some managers would deal with it in a different way. But Arteta's very much his own man, and he's gone in there and done it his way.
Yeah, you just said there, John, you were saying that at times you had issues with managers. Was it that way around, or did the manager have an issue with you?
Well, it was a bit of both, really. You know, sometimes if I got taken off, then I would take objection to that, and I would voice my case in the dressing room afterwards. But the bottom line is, all right, the manager's always right. The manager's always right, because I've had plenty of, you know, ups and downs in managers. I used to get on great with Bobby Gould, but I get on great with Bobby now with the Welsh team. You know, Ian Rush, Mark Hughes and Dean Saunders were keeping me out of the team. and I thought they should be playing. So I'm going in at half-time thinking, why aren't they playing? And he's like, well, Ian Rush is playing for Liverpool. Dean Saunders is in Galatasaray and Mark Hughes is at Manchester United, John, and you're a sub for Arsenal. So the manager sometimes makes great points. And as a player, you should always want to play and you should always voice your opinion. Never be happy coming off. Never be contented when the manager takes you off. Have your say. Because ultimately, you know, if you believe in yourself, I was never happy coming off. I didn't want to come off. I didn't want to miss games. If I'd scored the previous week, I want to play the next week. I don't care if you want to rest players. No, I don't want to rest. I'm fine. You know, so ultimately, you have your words with your manager. And if you're both grown men, as football is all about, it's not for shrinking violets, it's for good characters, grown men. You go in and knock his door of his office and you say, Gaffer, if I was a little bit out of order on Saturday, I maybe should have come to see you rather than have an argument in front of all the other players. And you're the boss. Whatever you says goes. I shouldn't have answered you back. You go in, you clear the air, and bang, you're back in the team the next week or you're not in the team. I just think sometimes people pussyfoot around little arguments and little pushes and shoves as you're walking off the pitch. This happens all the time. This happens all the time in the game. Managers actually quite like it when players dig each other out in the dressing room, as long as it doesn't go over the top and there's no physical contact. If it's verbals and pointing the finger and this, that and the other, managers quite like that. Rather than them do it every week, they'd rather turn around and say, look, at least my team care. You've shown today that you care about losing. You've shown today you care about the centre-half not tracking back or not being in line with the other centre-halves. You were lazy. You were further back. You kept them onside. So the lads dig each other out in the dressing rooms. That's absolutely fine. Deal with it. That's the modern game.
You said there that Wenger had a reputation for being perhaps a little bit softer spoken than some of his contemporaries at the time. Did he ever have that ability to show a bit of fury in the dressing room?
Well, I'm sure he did, but I only worked for 2 years under Arsene Wenger and I moved on to West Ham. But Arsene Wenger just had a way about him that he made the players absolutely idolise him. His methods on the training ground, the way he spoke to people, the way he took people to one side. He's very, very intelligent, very knowledgeable on the game. I'd never heard him swear, Arsene Wenger. He was just an absolute gentleman. And he was a one-off, of course. You can't compare Arsene Wenger and Sir Alex Ferguson, can you? You know, you hear about the hairdryer treatment and the players walking up the tunnel half-time, absolutely terrified if they've had a poor first half to go and face the manager. Whereas I think with Arsene Wenger, the way that he was with players, he dealt with it in a different way. And not everybody's the same. You know, not everybody shows their temperament in the same way. But I think I would imagine Arsene Wenger, you know, would have had a different side to him if he needed it. But I certainly didn't see it. He basically left a lot to his players. But when I was there, we had great leaders like Tony Adams and Martin Keown and Ray Parlour and Bergkamp Wright. He basically ran the dressing room, really.
Well, who was the harshest manager you played under at club level then?
Well, I think Martin O'Neill was very demanding. I think if you played well and you scored and, you know, you played the next week. If you didn't, and you know, you didn't play as well as you could, if you weren't up to standard, then you know he'd have no hesitation in taking you out of the team. It's all about standards, you know, for some managers. And I think sometimes when you've got a successful team, listen, there's no doubt Jurgen Klopp, even the great players like Mane, Firmino, Salah, if they're not at it, he'd have no hesitation of bringing them out of the team. That's why they're at it every single week, because they've got their own standards. But Jurgen Klopp, you know, don't be kidded by the guy on the touchline that is smiling and laughing away and clapping and, you know, waving to the crowd. There's no doubt that Jurgen Klopp has got them players, you know, like a well-oiled machine, you know, to a system, and everybody being at it. And that's how you win. That's how you win. You know, you look at Man United. You know, in their heyday, they were 4-4-2. Beckham down the right with Neville. Giggs on the left with Irwin. Two solid centre-backs, midfielders, world-class forwards. And you know, they were just so driven, and that's how you've got to be. And as I said, if the players are driven, and if you've got the right mentality as a player, the manager, you make the manager's job easy, because he knows he can trust his players, and he can trust his players to go and play and go and win and be successful. And that's why, you know, that's why they're so successful, some of these teams, because they have top players with the right mindset and with the right attitude.
John, you talk about those exact phrases that you've just used there about the right attitude, the right mentality, beating a path to the manager's door. One of the most interesting stories on the planet at the minute in terms of football is that one of the best footballers on the planet is not playing. And I don't know how happy he is, but it looks as if he's content to flit away what should be some of his prime years, your compatriot at Real Madrid. What's happening with Gareth Bale, and how much would you like to see him show maybe a bit of a better attitude and get back out there playing?
Yeah, well, this is the big question, isn't it? You know, Gareth still comes and plays for Wales. He's still pivotal. You know, Wales are in the Euros, obviously, with the pandemic. The Euros have been put back to 2021. He was obviously looking to play for Wales because he can get a few games under his belt, you know. I don't know what the situation is. I don't know whether it's Zidane or Gareth, to be honest. I think Gareth's fit. He's wanting to play. The manager seems to not want him to play or want to keep him on the bench. You know, Gareth Bale's won 4 Champions Leagues at Real Madrid. He's scored goals in 2 of them finals. And Gareth Bale's got 106 goals for Real Madrid. He's the greatest foreign product that's ever gone abroad in terms of his success and the goals that he has scored. And I don't know how many assists, but he's got a huge contract. He's got another year or 2 years left on his current deal. I don't know. People might ask, well, why doesn't he want to go and play football? But he's you know, he's sitting on a huge deal. Is it his fault or is it the manager's fault? Because if he's fit and he's training well and he's, you know, it's not his fault if the manager's not picking him. If the manager prefers to play other players, or if it's... But it seems to have gone a bit personal now. I think the rumours are... I don't know. I don't speak to Gareth. We have an agent, Stella Promotions, used to look after me, but I'm not with them guys anymore. So, as I said, I'm not too up to date on the situation. All I know is that I know how good Gareth Bale is, and I think the whole world knows how good Gareth Bale is.
It's almost, John, like, his, I mean, like you say, it's impossible to know from the outside looking in exactly whose fault this is. And it certainly seems also, as you've said, that Zidane just doesn't fancy him for whatever reason. But at the same time, when you see the stuff that he's up to when he's in the stands, like making the binocular signs and whatever else is going on, it doesn't indicate that his attitude is necessarily exactly where it needs to be.
Well, listen, you know, I think couple of hand gestures, and when you're sitting there as a substitute and you've got the world's photos on you and every photographer in the stadium, hundreds of them, is pointing the camera at you, then listen, players will do that. At the end of the day, we don't know if he's training well and he's on time and he's offering himself up every week to play and the manager doesn't want to play him, then there's a clear problem. I think Real Madrid would like him off. Off their books. I think Real Madrid would like him to move on so Zidane can use the money or he can use other players. He's not quite, you know, he's not in Zidane's thoughts then at all. That seems to be the situation for me. But as I said, Gareth is on a huge contract and it's his prerogative whether or not he wants to stay or whether or not he wants to move on. And people will comment. People will have their say about it. You know, who's come in for him? Have Manchester United come in for him? Have Spurs come in for him? Are
people Chinese frightened club, I think, what, yeah.
Well, you know, are people frightened of what they've got to pay him? I think he's on £600,000 a week. You know, which is ludicrous money. It's good luck to him, Gareth. He's earning great money. He loves Madrid, as his agent keeps saying. You know, so we just have to see and sit and see how it goes. But the question, Gareth's attitude, we don't know, do we? It's easy on the outside to say, well, you know, he's doing a binoculars sign and he's doing this. We don't know. He could be working hard in training. And Zidane just don't fancy him. He just doesn't want to play him. So, as I said, I don't know. I've not really got an insight into it. I'm just like you guys. I'm just looking at it from the outside, really.
Let's move on to the Scottish Premiership, John. It's back this weekend, and we're going to hear a lot about the 10 in a row, possibly every weekend over the next few months. I don't think the First Old Firm is until October. It'll be crystallised at that point. How big a deal do you think this is going to become in the players' heads, the idea that history really is on the line this season?
Well, naturally, it will be in the players' heads because Celtic have a chance to create history. It's an unprecedented record they're going for. It's never happened before. It probably won't happen again that a team have an opportunity to win 10 titles in a row. Both teams have done the 9. So 10 titles would be huge. It's history. And Celtic already has an incredible history. They want to try and add this to that. You know, Celtic probably, you know, have several players that have, you know, been there from day one, the likes of McGregor, the likes of Scott Brown, the likes of James Forrest. So they have got players who understand and they've been there for the previous 9 cups, leagues. So in terms of that, I would give Celtic an advantage, but Rangers will be absolutely determined to stop this. They will do everything in their power, you know, just to stop Celtic winning the 10. And it's a big ask for Steven Gerrard, not won a trophy yet in 2 years, 6 attempts at a trophy, not won a trophy, signed over 30 players. So, you know, it'll be exciting, you know, it'll be passionate, as the Scottish Celtic and Rangers always brings, you know, it's never dull, as you know. But as I go back to saying, you know, this is something that Celtic would want to do, and the fans are absolutely determined, obviously led by Neil Lennon, to go and achieve this. But it won't be easy, you know, like every other league title to win. It's not easy.
How much of a success has Steven Gerrard been at Rangers so far, in your view?
He hasn't been a success, has he? He hasn't been a success because he's not won nothing. You know, so I don't know in terms of he's Celtic won the title fairly comfortable. They've won the season before fairly comfortable. They've won cups. And, you know, he's obviously give the fans a little bit of impetus. He's give the supporters a little bit of belief with the money that Rangers have been able to find for him in terms of bringing in players. They found £7.5 million last season to bring in Kent from Liverpool. This year they brought in Balogun, the Nigerian international, a goalkeeper on loan from Sunderland. And, you know, they will probably find a bit more. Morelos is vital to them. Defoe has got injured. They start the season away at Aberdeen tomorrow, August 12 kickoff. Celtic start against Hamilton on Sunday. But listen, if you're looking at stats and you're looking at it on paper, then he hasn't been a success. But if you're looking at the crowd thinking, well, they beat Celtic last season, and before they went away to Dubai, there was a little bit of momentum there on Rangers' side, but they never finished the job off. And ultimately, if you know anything about football, you are judged on trophies and you're judged on winning games, and you know, you're judged on winning cups, especially up here in Scotland. You've got to win. If you don't win, then you're a failure. You know, you've got to win. You've got to keep the press off your back. And the only way you do that is by winning.
How big is the pressure then on Steven Gerrard this season? Like, I think the way you put it there probably suggests that if they allow Celtic to do the 10 in a row, the Rangers fans, not all of them anyway, will stand for that.
Well, the same for Neil Lennon and Celtic. Neil has to do this. The amount of pressure that Neil Lennon is on this year is unbelievable. you know, in terms of what the fans, the pressure that the fans put on you up here in Scotland. You can't lose. If you lose or draw for Celtic or Rangers, it's a crisis. You know, you've got to win. The fans are demanding. There's 260,000 stadiums, you know, baying for your blood in terms of when you're on the pitch because you've got to win. The demands are huge. And to think that, you know, Stephen Gerrard has come up here with a view to stopping Celtic. He hasn't quite been able to do that in the previous 2 years. And he has to find a way this year to try and stop the 10 in a row. The pressure is huge. And the start will be big because within the first, you know, month, within the first month of August, if either team, you know, fall two or three, four, 5 points behind, then straight away there's going to be pressure. So Stephen knows what's ahead. He knows the challenge. He's very experienced. He was a great player, of course. And he will be trying his utmost, you know, to bring in what type of player that he needs. But ultimately, lads, he's got to go and win. And you say how much of a success he's been. Well, he hasn't been a success, has he? How can you call him a success when Celtic have swept up the last six trophies available while Stephen's been the Rangers manager?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting watch this weekend and thereafter. John, before we let you away, I don't want to get your thoughts. Kevin Caban was on with us during the week and he was talking about the Jordan Henderson that he was announced, obviously, as the Football Writers Player of the Year. And it's kind of divided opinion, hasn't it? Like, I think that you've Liverpool fans on one side saying that he absolutely deserves it and then kind of everybody else after that saying that he wasn't the best footballer in the league. Kev was on saying that he thought Henderson only won it because he was English. What's your take?
Oh, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the fact because he's English. That's a load of nonsense. Because he's English. He's won it because he's led Liverpool to a World Cup, World Trophy Cup. He's led Liverpool to a Champions League and he's led him to a, you know, the title, the Premiership title, the first time in 30 years. He's been pivotal to Liverpool. You know, they've had great players around him. He keeps driving them on. He skippers the team. And yes, there's De Bruyne is a better player, an all-round player. I think everybody would understand that. Technically, you know, De Bruyne can cross, he can score. You know, his technique is unbelievable. Joint success in terms of assists and goals and everything else. But, you know, I don't think you can begrudge Jordan Henderson winning this trophy because the season that he's had has been outstanding. You could maybe say, you know, for sentiment, you know, a lot of the votes and a lot of the decisions have gone his way. But listen, you cannot deny that he's a very good player. I wouldn't say he's a world-class player like De Bruyne. So I can see why there's been an argument. But the fact, whoever's gone on and said it's because he's English, is talking nonsense. How can you get that guy on you to give your comments, you know, on this show when he's saying it's because he's English? That is outrageous to say that.
Well, it's Kevin Caban, John. As you know, he's got a blue nose, so you know that might be the context.
Yeah, but that's outrageous. You can't say that. You know, that is terrible. If you're looking for an headline, then there you go. That's it. He's give you one. But De Bruyne has no doubt a better technical all-round footballer than Henderson. But you can't begrudge Henderson winning, you know, the Player of the Year because he has had an outstanding season. And you could argue there's a little bit of sentimental feeling there because of what Liverpool have done and what their achievements have been. Look at their achievements. They won the league by 25 points or something. But that is remarkable. Led
I
by
suppose
Henderson.
It depends, John, on what your criteria for picking. Like, if you're saying it's purely Footballer of the Year, I guess I'm trying to represent Kevin Caban's views here, but maybe badly. But he would say that if you're talking about a strict Footballer of the Year, as you say, he's probably not world class, and maybe there are other contenders. But it's that versus having led Liverpool to what he's done over the last number of months.
Well, listen, I've just said that. I've just said basically that he's not a good a player as De Bruyne. But you can't begrudge him winning it this year. And it's up to you, it's up to an individual, whichever way they want to look at it, whichever way they want to see it. But you can't begrudge Henderson. He's had a wonderful season, and he is a very, very good player without being a world-class player. So people's opinions will go on forever. Did Roy Keane ever win Player of the Year?
It's a good question. Did he win it once?
Well, he's not English, is he?
Yeah.
Roy's not English.
2000, I think.
For every Roy Keane, there's a Scott Parker. For every Roy Keane, there's a Scott Parker, John, I think, is there.
yeah, but to say that Henderson's English, come on. I like Kev, he's my mate, killer. But, hey, come on, for goodness sake.
The Canadian air is probably getting to him, John, and says, what's going on, you know?
It's all that dancing.
John, we've taken enough of your time this morning. Thanks a million for taking the call and being so generous with your time.
All right, guys. Anytime. Thanks, all the best.
I signed for them after the Euros, and after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking, regretting it, what have I done? It was like I walked into a circus. It's amazing, isn't it?
Right, all right. The Deal or No Deal for this Friday morning is on set, just gone 9:45, and we're going to put on through his paces now and find out how legitimate he thinks some of these deals actually are. First of all, in the last 24 hours thereabouts, on a rapid acceleration in Manchester United's interest in Raul Jimenez from Wolves. He's now expected to actually move to Old Trafford, apparently as agreed to 27. Paulinho, I should say, has agreed to £27 million deal to join Wolves. That'll pave the way for Jimenez to leave. And staying in Manchester a couple of days ago, Daniel Harris, of course, friend of the show, tweeted to say that he understands that Jadon Sancho to Manchester United is close. This is one that's been on and off over the last number of months. Club have agreed €60 million euro up front, €60 million in installments after that. And all has been negotiated. It does, of course, though, obviously leave the question of what Manchester United are going to do with all these forward players. So Martial, Rashford, Greenwood, Sancho and Jimenez. What gives?
It's interesting that Jimenez is the sort of attacker that they've elected to sign, if this story is to be believed. First of all, I think a legitimacy rating on this one of 5. I'm not having this one fully. I think that Sancho, we gave that about a legitimacy rating of, what, 8 earlier this week? I can't remember what Phil gave it, but it looks like it's going to happen. They don't really need any more beyond that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking for an attacker at the moment for Manchester United, you're looking for an attacker who can play on the left of a front three. If we're basing this purely on form, Marcus Rashford has been the man who has been in the worst form of that Manchester United attack. Now, Jadon Sancho, certainly, speaking personally, when I saw him coming to Manchester United, I thought, right, Jadon Sancho will play on the right of that front three. He has played on the left, and he has been outstanding on the left whenever he's played there. And I wonder if that's actually where he is going to play, and that it might actually be a battle between Rashford and Martial for the centre spot, and that the other person may actually get shunted out to the right for a battle with Mason Greenwood. That I actually think that they're quite well stacked in the middle, because I think they may have a battle internally for that jersey. I think Greenwood as well will be in with a shout for that jersey as well. Like, if you're talking purely on form, the person who is under most threat in that front three at the moment is Marcus Rashford. You would assume that things will level out as the next season resumes, and he will come back to his previous greatness, because his sustained start to his career was outstanding. Mentally, he is all there. He's so mature, but he has underperformed after the restart this season. So Martial's been brilliant, Greenwood's been brilliant. Who do you play alongside them if you were picking a team tomorrow? You'd love to have Sancho on the left of a three. They don't need Jimenez, and I'm giving that a legitimacy rating of only 5. Despite the fact that, as you say, Paulinho, he's gone to Wolves, he's been brilliant for Braga all year, a very, very similar replacement to Jimenez. Jimenez, I want to say, took a little bit of time to get going, obviously was on loan last season. Outside of Bruno Fernandes, this signing of the season this year for any Premier League club, I think, when they got him permanently, I think they'd be stupid to let him go, first of all. But if they are, and if this story is to be believed, then Paulinho seems a good replacement.
Alright, we'll see how it all plays out. Rashford is the one that obviously is just an interesting one, that, as you say, Martial probably has the edge at the minute, and you wonder from Marcus Rashford's point of view, you know, if he's lower down the pecking order, does he hang around? You know what I mean? He's been in that position before, and now suddenly they're bringing in a couple more forward options.
Yeah.
And just maybe Rashford decides that, listen, I'm going to go somewhere that I'm going to get football.
Well, here's the thing, at the start of the season, certainly from the start of the middle third of the season, there was the debate about this, about whether or not the best version of Manchester United's attack is Martial through the middle or Rashford through the left. And there was a sense of appeasing Anthony Martial by playing him through the middle. He wasn't happy by when he was playing out wide. And personally, I thought it was actually kind of weak management at the time, giving way to Martial and putting him in the middle. That was quickly proven wrong, especially after the restart, with how good Martial has been. But I wonder, privately, had there been a conversation with Marcus Rashford saying, are you happy to actually be shunted out to the left because we might get the best out of Anthony Martial? And Rashford goes, yeah, that's fine. And inadvertently, he shot himself in the foot with his own personal progression at Manchester United, because I think Rashford through the middle is quite a weapon. So, you've mentioned it there as well. I think that there is a battle for form when it comes to Rashford, but he's got his off-season now. My suspicion is that he will come back to exactly how good he has been previously, and this is a blip rather than the norm.
And also, other news from Manchester. The Manchester News reporting that Inter are close to a permanent deal. This will be a huge relief for United fans, for Alexis Sanchez to finally get off the books for good. He's completed a season-long loan deal, so we'll monitor that as we progress. Big one for you here, Owen. Sit tight. As Manchester United make all those moves, it seems like Arsenal have become the dark horses to lure Jack Grealish away from Aston Villa. It's according to Sky Sports News sources, which has become its own TV channel. They report that the Gunners registered their interest in the club's captain. This has got an Arsenal move all over it, hasn't it?
No, it doesn't.
A player that everybody's totally unsure of. He may be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he may end up being Jack Wilshere. We're just not 100% sure exactly what direction his career is going to take place. Is he the world's greatest player, and we just haven't got to see that because he's in an underperforming team, or is he actually just made to be the latest Arsenal flop on?
Manchester United would be a perfect signing for Jack. This is the Manchester United signing. I don't know where you're getting the Arsenal trend here.
Legitimacy rating of him joining Arsenal?
3. Arsenal haven't really gone out to sign the best young English kid who's already established. They tend to bring them up through their own ranks. Like the last time, I'm just trying to think here, where they actually splashed out and got involved in a bidding war for even a British youngster who ended up coming to Arsenal was probably Aaron Ramsey when Manchester United were coming. Like, I'm not sure where you're getting it from that this is a typical Arsenal signing. I presume you're talking about the perceived mentality of Jack Grealish, where
all the indicators are there that this is like the most Arsenal signing of all time
because of how he behaves off the pitch.
Because we're not sure about him, like, is the point, right? Like, still at the end of the season, people are like, you know, when Jack Grealish is coming in and out of games and is not necessarily yet living up to the hype. Maybe this is all to do with the fact that he's playing for a team that are just a shocking team and it's impossible to look good. Maybe that's what it is. But what I'm saying is that it's got an Arsenal signing all over it because they end up bringing him in and he ends up actually proving to be not the player everybody thought he was.
No, you're getting this all wrong. You're basing this on the Unai Emery / end of Arsene Wenger era Arsenal decision. Have you listened to Mikel Arteta speak? He is Pep Guardiola, but with hair. Would Pep Guardiola sign Jack Grealish? No, he would not. There's your answer. Mikel Arteta would not stand for Jack Grealish.
Yeah,
and like I sometimes feel that
Pep Guardiola wouldn't sign Jack Grealish because he's got like uber millions to do whatever the hell he wants. And
true,
it's not the budget that Arteta has.
But I think it's also to do with discipline. Just for the record here, I think the media have been a little bit harsh. Not the media in general. I think maybe the tabloid coverage in the UK has been a little bit harsh of Jack Grealish at times. He's obviously made big mistakes. And maybe we are using that as a stick to beat him with when it comes to his own professionalism. Now, you may say that's fair enough. I think that if there is any bit of a doubt about that element of his commitment, then he will not go to Arsenal. And I think actually a 3 in the legitimacy rating might be generous on that front.
There is no way what's going to happen is he's going to join Arsenal.
No,
he's going to join Arsenal. He's going to get back on the hippie crack. He's going to himself and Guendouzi, who will still be at the club from the start of next season, was it Lacazette, are going to be training with the under-21s and they'll be the best under-21 team on the planet.
Yeah, the under-23, they're okay at the moment. Like, I mean, he's already been stung by Guendouzi. He's going to get rid of him. The Mesut Ozil situation is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. And that, like, I see news that he may be hanging around for another year, which is obviously terrible in itself. They can't be having this sort of gamble where they're taking a risk on a player who doesn't have an outstanding commitment to the cause, or even if it's a perception. I think that's enough for Arsenal to completely shelve this and don't look at it whatsoever. The most important piece of business they can do in that position this year would be to sell Mesut Ozil, but that's not going to happen. But it's also to keep Dani Ceballos and ensure that he stays at the club and he is interested. Like, even as the sort of player that Jack Grealish is, does he fit into that Arsenal system? I'm not sure he does. Like, for me, Jack Grealish will thrive in a 4-2-3-1 formation. Arsenal have played it at times this season with Joe Willock sitting behind a striker. That would be the position for Jack Grealish, but I'm not sure if Arsenal are actually going to play that, because I think they're much better playing a 3-4-3. Jack Grealish, if he's going to go somewhere, I think Tottenham are top of the list, because they have played that formation. They've had a huge interest in the player down through the years, and maybe Jose Mourinho will think to himself, I kind of like this character who I can mould into my own team. He'll look at it from an opposite way.
No, he's not a Jose Mourinho player. A guy who flits in and out of games like that, he's not a Jose Mourinho player. He's going to end up doing a Gareth Bale on him.
He flits in and out of
games
because he plays for Aston Villa, I think. I think he genuinely is an outstanding
talent. And you
think
playing for Spurs is that this is the solution for that? I mean, I think legitimately rating of his potential move to Arsenal, I'm going to put it like a 9 out of 10. It's nearly nailed on that he's destined to go there and be a flop.
You're talking nonsense.
At a flop team. You mentioned Ozil and a 10% chance on that he gets a contract extension.
No, 0%. Why would you 0%. Give Mesut Ozil a contract extension? Where are you getting 10% from?
Just throwing it at you. Just plucking that one.
That would be the stupidest management move of the Arsenal hierarchy ever, and that is saying something.
We had some actual transfer business yesterday with Bournemouth accepting a £41 million bid from Man City for Nathan Ake. John Jones on last night said that Ake's a good player, but not a great player. And Pep needs great players. Is he right?
He is. He's not a great player at the moment, but again, he's been in Bournemouth shambles for the season that's been. So I think that is a bit harsh to judge any defender. It's interesting how we're getting into the minutiae of how accomplished a player is with which side of their body, especially when it comes to defenders over recent times. Like, Jamie Carragher last night on Twitter saying, I like Nathan Ake and think he will suit Man City, but with Laporte a guaranteed starter, I'm not convinced two left-footed centre-backs works. I know right-footed players play together, but it never feels right the other way around to me. So it begs the question, if we take that into account, what are Chelsea doing when they have the buyback option? Kurt Zouma, right-footed. Rudiger, right-footed. Does Nathan Ake fit with either of them if they play a back four? Potentially he does, and with Chelsea in pole position to land this transfer, you'd wonder if they're sitting on their hands a little bit too much, considering they're splashing the cash on Timo Werner and are set to do so potentially on Kai Havertz as well, and have done so on Ziyech already. I think that this is a miss by Chelsea if they don't get in on Nathan Ake, but it looks like Manchester City have zoomed in front of them and have actually gazumped them on this front. John Giles is right that he's not a great player, yes, but he's destined to become one with the right management. Now, Pep Guardiola has failed with accomplished defenders in the past, John Stones notably, or he has failed to turn decent defenders into great defenders. We thought John Stones was on that trajectory under Pep. Didn't happen. Same thing could easily happen with Nathan Ake.
It's farcical. That's deal or no deal.
I signed for them after the Euros, and after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking, regretting it, what have I done? Like, I walked into a circus. It's amazing, isn't it?
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.